What is going on? I am Scott from Koenig. Welcome to another episode of the Behind the Wheel podcast. So today's a good episode. We have Jonathan Woodley from S3 Magazine here. If you have not seen, S3 Magazine recently launched an app for the phone. Yes, I believe it's available right now on iTunes and Google Play. And if it's not up on Google Play yet, I believe we'll be there shortly. It's a good app. It's you know, I've been using it, and the notifications are not overwhelming, but they're perfectly timed. So the ability to kind of see what's going on really brings you into kind of the culture of cars. It kind of allows you to have a good spot to capture some of the things that are happening in the industry and also catch some of your favorite builds or builds that you didn't know were your favorite but turn into your favorite.
Yeah.
So go download it now. I will tell you, as a car guy, I've have it and I use it pretty much every day. So there's that. Jonathan Woodley is with us. Let's get him right in now, Max, if you don't mind. So what up? I'm gonna put on headphones.
Oh, there's a whole intro for Woodley too. Look at that.
Wait, do we not have audio for Jonathan Woodley? No, there he is. What's up?
I'm here.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. You're there. So, man, so first off, congrats on the app, because the app is super dope.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was actually kind of your idea. I guess we can get into that.
I wasn't looking for that. But what I was saying is that I think you guys did a good job. You know what I think was interesting is that we're in a day and age where we know that this old device here is the remote of our life, right? And with that said, you know, going to a website sometimes becomes a chore that we're not willing to make. And so the fact that you've been able to kind of surface the data that you guys have continuously put on your social and on your website and on, you know, some of the magazine articles and features that you do and put them all into one place and then stuff it into a one button click on a phone, I think is really a good look and something that was missed by a lot of people before they decided to fold up shop.
Yeah. I know, man. And like if you guys listening don't know S3 Magazine or don't know me, like, I am the last person that would have an app. S3 is the last company that would do an app. You know, we're like print all the way. We're old school. I usually tune out to a lot of tech in general, and I have a short fuse for it. But like, honestly, now that we're in it, like, I love it. I'm probably the most amped I've been in 10 years. Because, you know, for the last 10 years, print's struggling, and we're doing it longer than probably we should have been and stuff like that. And I was really hesitant to be able to envision S3 outside of print. It's what defined S3. S3 was print, you know what I mean? And so now it's kind of like this, I don't know, man. It's genuinely kind of energizing because now I'm like, it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter where we put the voice. It's the voice that needs to get out there. So, I'm kind of stoked about it, and we'll see where it goes. Like you said, it's brand new. It's it is on Android. It is on Apple, but I think we've only been doing it for like a few weeks now. So, It'll be interesting to see what we can do. Because for our entire careers, we've had to get somebody to pay to subscribe, you know? Hey, it's $20 and you don't get anything right away, but, you know, like, you should do it. You know what I mean? Like, you have people that have been meaning to subscribe for literally years and just don't get around to it. And now it's like, just grab your phone. Yeah. You can be a casual car enthusiast. You can be 15 and just get into this whole thing. You can be 40 and fell out of cars 20 years ago, but you kind of want to get back into it. You can be an old dude. You know what I mean? Like, it can appeal to anybody. So I don't know, man. We'll see where it goes.
Well, I was telling Woolly before, like, it translates perfectly because through the app, you get a lot of exclusivity, meaning that a lot of the, like, that's what a magazine was for at the time that it was kind of, you know, while they were delivering them out. So through the app, you get exclusivity of builds. Not only that, you get the podcast that you get to listen to on there that S3 has themselves as well. And I think through that app specifically is the only way that you're going to get it. And that's how we kind of got to the article that led to this podcast today, was through that app. You know what I mean? So I think that's a cool thing that you get to be part of the cool club when it comes to being the S3 app.
And if you sign up today, Woolly's actually sending out a digital 8x10 copy of me.
Like yeah, you know, I do have to say this was inspired by you. It was earlier this year. We had a conversation and you were just saying something along those lines of like, you know, like the magazine's rad and we'll support that all the way. But like, there's so much that's missed when you just send the magazine, you know, to somebody's house, like all the random videos. Some of them are brilliant every once in a while. A lot of them are dumb. You know what I mean? But like, it all gets filtered, you know, the TikToks or whatever, like they get filtered through the app. And like the other thing that I'm personally enjoying a lot is now I can do news. Like when you got a magazine that comes out quarterly, like news isn't relevant. That's not a thing. But now, and this is especially timely because I hate where the automotive industry is going, but it's a great time to be in it if you want to fight for the automotive industry. So like I'm reading all these kind of cream puffy articles all the time and it's getting me ticked off, you know, and I can now go and write articles about it and immediately send it out there. You know what I mean? Like with a magazine, the emotions fade, like you'll get hot, but then you write something and then you go back to it a couple weeks later and you're like, man, I really probably shouldn't say that, you know, and you edit yourself. Whereas now you just kind of go for it and then it's out there.
Well, what I think is interesting is that we looked at, like I was using the app the other day and this is kind of what inspired, look at my head. I'm super cut off.
Nice.
Watch, I'll just keep moving up and see if Max really... So the thing is that you wrote an article just the other day and it was interesting because I did see the press conference and I was trying to read about the press conference. So for people that don't understand, first off, you can go in the app, you can find the article that Wooly wrote commenting on this topic, but Mr. Toyota and not T-O-T. Yeah, exactly. But Akio Toyota, who has been, you know, he's, I believe his official title is like the president of the board of directors of Toyota or something like that. Right. Sound right?
Sure.
Okay. So basically like,
sure.
He has a press conference. He's talking and Toyota has been known for building drivers cars for many years. And this is no different. He is a true enthusiast and has always been known as such. And he basically says, hey, look, you know, like we think that this is a mistake for the entire industry to run together and try to come up with these ridiculous initiatives of making, you know, completely carbon neutral cars or going completely EV at that 2035 number that people keep throwing around. And because of that, he said Toyota essentially will not take that stance. Their goal for Toyota is by 2050 they want to be carbon neutral. But the way that Toyota wants to get there is by utilizing something that makes more sense that we've talked about on our podcast multiple times. I believe you and I have had conversations about this. The ability to incorporate the use of electric side by side with internal combustion engines in a form that we have heard for many years called hybrid.
Hybrid.
Now, look, for those who don't understand, Toyota developed hybrid technology.
1997.
Yeah, because they put out the Prius, man. Like, they've been doing this for a long time. And the one thing that strikes me when I listen to, you know, to this information that Mr. Toyota was putting out is that he said, for every one electric vehicle that they make, they can make 8 hybrids that are plug-in hybrids that have an electric range of about 40 miles or greater. And they can make 8 of those with the same type of materials without having necessarily supply shortages. We're going to run into an issue where nickel and lithium and a lot of the precious metals that they use in the battery production are going to be limited, not to mention all the environmental crap that you will see from having to mine this stuff, right? Now, the part that gets me that people keep missing is the fact that when you make an EV for the consumer to use. When you do this, you know, kind of electric vehicle technology, you're not going to carbon neutral. That's a falsity. All you're doing is exporting that you know, pollution somewhere else.
Well, so, and that's why I was asking that. That's why I was like, the ton question. That's why I was asking that.
All right, so Luis, let's go back to the ton question.
So I asked, how much is a ton? What is a and then I asked, what is a metric ton?
Right.
First off, is that the same thing?
Well, so, no, it's not.
Okay.
All right. So I think I was a little lost, whatever. You equated that. So. Yeah.
We're looking it up literally as the podcast is going, by the way, guys.
Sorry. So, no. What I was looking for is a ton is about to... All right, well, so Max says on the screen.
Thanks, Max.
So, Max... So, as Wooly kind of got it more correct than we did...
He did.
Or, no, Max had it right. Either way, 2,000 pounds roughly is a ton. But a metric ton is using kilograms, right? So, it ends up being...
1,000
kilograms. Now, I don't know how...
Is a ton.
I'm not exactly sure how the metric people decided to use that. But either way...
The reason why I was asking that is because as I was looking up, you know, and researching all this stuff, I learned that EV manufacturers are using about 70 metric tons of CO2 emissions once they're, you know, in their factories, as opposed to... an internal combustion manufacturer is using about 7 metric tons of CO2 emissions at the current moment. You know, obviously that'll probably change in the future.
Yeah.
But at the current moment, just to build these cars right now, we are polluting more than an internal combustion car is. Just the manufacturing part of it, you know?
Yeah. So let's wind back. Willie, this statement, first off, coming from Mr. Toyota, I think is... pretty bold and pretty monumental in the grand scheme of things. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it takes huge balls.
Yeah.
To put it eloquently. Where do I start? Like, first of all, yes, I personally believe that the whole EV thing is hugely politically driven. It's kind of about a transfer of wealth more than it's about being green. However, if you need to get a lot of useful idiots on your side, you got to pander to them, and you pander to being green, right? So like, that's where this is going. And in a large part, I think that's why we skipped over hybrid altogether. You know what I mean? Like, now it's all about EV. And you guys are talking about the tons and metric tons. I'm not really great with numbers. but I do know... Okay, so... They like to say that electric vehicles are zero emissions.
Right.
They are once they're made.
Yes.
And that's not even true.
That's not true.
You have to burn coal to actually
make electric and stuff like that. Yeah.
But for argument's sake, we can say they are once they're made. But like the manufacturing process is a lot more strenuous.
Yep.
It takes, like you said, a whole lot more material. So you expend a lot more CO2 or carbon footprint or whatever, however you want to define it, making the cars. And then America is doing what America does, and we're not making like sensible small EVs. We're making Hummer EVs that weigh 9,000 pounds that take giant batteries.
Yeah.
It is like it's what I've started calling fashionable EV. It's not about being green or good to the earth. It's about looking as such, you know, and doing it fashionably. The things are out of the price range of what most Americans can afford.
Yeah.
It's not what most people want. Anyway, going back to Toyota, the person,
right,
and what he was saying, you know, he shares a lot of thoughts that I do. I mean, first of all, he came out of the gate saying he loves cars, which is what nobody else is saying. Second of all, he seems to be thinking very clearly and using his brain, which you were talking about. You can make 6 or 8 hybrids with the same amount of battery as it takes to make one fully
300. One 300-mile range battery car, electric vehicle. You can make 8 40 plug-in battery hybrids. And the thing is that most Americans commute on average 40 or less miles to work round trip. So what you're essentially saying is if you utilize that ability to even have that small electric capacity, you will have done two things. One, you'll have made it so that the average person commuting to work, the bulk of the commuting and driving that will get done by an American is going to be done with zero emissions at that point. And two, the other thing you'll be doing is you'll be spreading this, well, I guess this does three things. Two, you'll be spreading this wealth of, you know, vehicle, what do we call this? Capacity, if you will, to a lot of other vehicles at a much more affordable price level right now. Right? We don't have to do anything crazy right now. And then the last thing you're going to do, which is the biggest mistake that's being made here, is you will utilize an existing infrastructure of, you know, fueling stations and continue to develop recharging stations for more electric vehicles to enter the market, but in a way that we won't find ourselves in 5 to 7 years not able to sustain the grid that we have no infrastructure built up with, and we end up finding ourselves in a massive, massive, massive transportation calamity.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, this is the way it works. Like, we should let internal combustion, which has been around for over 100 years, and we kind of know how that goes.
Yep.
Let that compete with EV. It will make internal combustion better. It's already gotten so much better,
you know,
in the last quarter decade or whatever, or a quarter century. So it'll continue to get better. It'll push EV to get better, also more affordable. You know what I mean? Like, everything's going to get better. And then ultimately, maybe one will prevail. And by the time it does, we'll be ready for it. And we'll also know the negative possible effects. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like what we're doing, it's just what America's doing in everything, man. We don't pay attention to the gray area. It's got to go totally this way or totally that way. We got to totally throw internal combustion out with the bathwater so that we can bring EV in, you know, and it's just, it's stupid. It's become divisive.
Yeah.
Like, a year and a half ago, I was open to EVs. It made a lot of sense. You know what I mean? And like, now I find myself getting kind of like, really close-minded to it, and it's because it's being pushed so hard. You know what I mean? Like, I had no problem with it when it's Tesla doing their thing and whatever, but like, all of a sudden when you know, administrations or whatever, not to get too political, when anybody tells me what I'm gonna do, it's the freaking punk rock generation in me. I'm not gonna do that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think one of the toughest parts is the deadline, which is telling anybody 2035.
But that's a self-inflicted deadline by politicians. In other words, I believe, and Wooly, you tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I believe that the only people that have made that formal declaration are New York and California.
Ah, see. Yeah.
So I don't believe... Maybe Oregon. You think? But I guess what I'm saying is you have a few states that have made this declaration. And the worst part about this declaration is they're doing it without anybody. I promise you that whoever they have on board, and this goes for the EPA too, for the EPA, for some of these states that are making these proclamations and making these promises, and what they're essentially doing, I promise you that there's no car people there.
Yep.
And I'm not talking about car enthusiasts that want to have, you know, burble tunes and bang and pops. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about car people as in educated people, whether they be from, places like SAE or anything like that, where they're able to really say, hey, look, in a grand scheme of things, this is probable and possible, and this is not. Like, we can't just throw money at the wall and throw incentives at the wall and just say, hey, because like, this is a California typical answer, right? They're the first ones to come out with a 2035 declaration that they will all vehicles must be sold in California. They must be electric by 2035. Now, here's the problem. They don't have the infrastructure or the grid to be able to supply it. Yep. In fact, a few weeks ago or a few months ago, when they had those rolling blackouts and the darn burnouts and stuff, they actually sent messages to basically the entire state saying, hey, listen, don't charge your electric vehicles right now. The grid is overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is California, and I'm going to throw New York into this because that's where I'm from, and I don't want to single anybody out. They have a great history of willing themselves to the finish line. In other words, there is no plan. I promise you. They have never looked at a plan to actually do this. What they're basically saying is, hey, we're going to set the deadline.
Yep.
We're going to move the goal stick to here.
Yep.
And we're just going to go with it. And everybody else, because we said we're going with it and we have to get there, they're going to come with us. That's asinine.
Yeah. I think, and that goes back to Toyota here. Like, they're not, and you were touching on it, they're not listening to the professionals in the field.
Yeah.
They're just going out there and exclaiming things, making pep rallies, more or less, you know? And what they need to be doing is listening to the professionals. It's like you said, Mr. Toyota here, it knows what is achievable. He's been doing this his whole life.
Yeah.
The politicians have just gotten into this. They don't know cars. They don't know what's feasible. The problem is, if you're talking about like Southern California or New York or any congested area, hell, even Atlanta these days, like going EV will move the problem out of your area. It
yeah.
will move the pollutants out of your town, but it is not solving the problem. There's still a whole lot of ugly stuff going on and giant cancerous holes getting dug up in the ground in the Congo and in places like that. And it's being regulated by really nasty people who are doing really bad things, not only to the earth, but to other people. But California is not, they're being so California. They're not paying attention to that. So long as they can make it clean in California and put yeah. a sticker on their car, they're good to go. And yes, it is almost imperative now to avoid disaster that these guys start listening to the professionals. When Toyota, I think he's in Vegas, and when he's got the balls to stand up in America and go, hey guys, you know, I know that your American manufacturers are just totally patting you on the back and telling you how smart you are, but like, this isn't going to work. You know, like
yeah.
we have big problems, big hurdles up here. Maybe we need to baby step it. I mean,
So just to take away some of the rantiness to this podcast, because for people that are listening, maybe we actually got somebody out there that is against what we're talking about. They strongly believe that electric vehicles are the way to go, and this is absolutely the only direction that vehicles can go. Let's just put out a few things that have been. That we want you to think about, right? Let's think about, obviously, a power grid that's not capable to support the current structure and current capacity that we need right now.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, remember that a lot of these municipalities and a lot of these states and the utility companies have been essentially done in a way where they're not owned by the state. They're not owned by the government. They're owned by private sectors. And so what happens here is the government or the municipality or state, they essentially say to these private companies, hey, look, we need you to improve your grid. You're a private company, so you could charge some more money and call them fees, you know, to basically build money in to build the grid up. They think they're working. In addition to that, these states and municipalities, they're giving more money and more incentives to these utility companies from taxpayer money to be able to say, hey, you got to continue to build the grid. Now, what's happening is, and this is what's not being looked at, is the fact that, so now you're one of these utility companies and you got this money, right? But now you take that money and now you have to apply to build these grids and get extra land and to build all these things. You need to apply for permits and different things. So what you do is you give your money back to the state to be able to get approval to do some of these things. And by the way, what ends up happening is the money that's being given out of your taxpayer money by the states to build to help them achieve that 2035 goal of getting the grid up to speed is being, you know, kind of, severely diminished at the actual source where it's needed, because it has to get sucked up by all the red tape before it gets there, right? So that's one. Think about that. You're never going to get to the finish line as fast as you need to because it's just done in such a political fashion. So that's one. Number two, you don't have the grid to support it. We just did that. We just talked about it. So you have to be able to plug these things in somewhere. Number three, how about the fact that with they're predicting that if going at the rate of that we're going by building electric vehicles in the next, and Mr. Toyota touched on this too, in the next 5 to 8 years, we're going to see significant supply chain shortages, which will halt battery production. And by doing that, essentially, we're going to run into an issue where we're going to have, you know, look, everybody just got done with this pandemic thing and watched used vehicle prices skyrocket. Well, that's going to happen again, but in a different sense. And it's because new vehicles won't be able to be made. Forget about microchips. Now they're going to be saying they don't have enough to do batteries. Where's all this lithium and nickel and all these different things coming from? Like, you know, battery technology will continue and improve, and it will get better. And yes, I believe that we are probably right on the edge of what is capable as far as how much we can improve the efficiency of the internal combustion engine. I think we've come so far, but I think we're narrowing in on the end of what's capable. However, what that basically says is you need to slow down electric production, and you need to still continue to make internal combustion engines. So what do you end up coming up with?
Hybrid. Well, and that's the one thing that I kind of want to emphasize is, and I'm sure Mr. Toyota was kind of trying to touch on, is not completely eradicate.
Be very careful what you say next.
Of course. Not completely eradicate the internal combustion engine infrastructure that was built already. It's kind of lean on it. You know what I mean? Make sure that you're using an infrastructure that has been built over 100 years that has been working, and not completely eliminate it and say, hey, we got it from here. You know, I think the hybrid is exactly that. That's what it is. It's kind of saying, okay, baby step it into how we can work on emissions and stuff like that, and then maybe later on move forward. But saying, like I said, the deadline I think is the problem with this whole situation. It's sitting there telling in 13 years, which, you know, rebuilt a whole new infrastructure that internal combustion engine already did for 100 years. It took them 100 years to get to where we are now. You know, so to sit there and say, okay, but do the same thing, but in 13 years, is literally impossible. It has to be impossible. You know what I mean? Like, it's just crazy to think that the EV will be able to do that in the same amount of time. Because what ends up happening is exactly what happened in California. We cannot support EVs. We cannot support the battery power of it. Because now they're telling people, yo, whoever, if you have an EV, you can't charge your car. So what does that mean? I can't get to work? I can't do my daily stuff that I need to do on a daily basis? That's insane to even think that.
I mean, Tesla is a beautiful company model when it's at 6% of all vehicle sales.
Yep, yep.
It works. It works. You know what I mean? But what we've done now is totally unravel everything, and we've made the other 94% of all vehicle manufacturers start to try to beat Tesla. And that's where it's not going to sustain, you know, the load that we're putting on it. I think y'all make some killer points. I was just sitting there listening there and learning things that I hadn't thought of before. You know, it kind of hit me like maybe to play devil's advocate, putting a date on it is what needs to be done. Even if behind the scenes, they know there's not a chance in hell of hitting it. You gotta put a goal to it. Maybe the word hybrid is like the worst thing for hybrids, because now it's so synonymous with a Prius, with like a neutered thing that, you know, a lot of people don't want to drive, that I can't think of hybrid. You know, they're going hybrid in IMSA next year or something like that. And my immediate reaction is just like, ugh, yeah. You know, and it's like, it's the name. When I hear hybrid, I just go, oh God. You know?
Yeah, but Wooly, I mean, let's talk about the car. I mean,
yeah.
NSX is hybrid. You know? Like, yes. Like, you know, we've had vehicles that have regenerative braking for a while that actually are non-plug-in hybrids. Like, there's a lot of technology there that exists and hasn't been kind of exploited. Now, I'm not going to pretend that, you know, regenerative braking and, you know, maybe whatever is going to be this great thing. We all know that, like, I mean, when you see a Suburban hybrid, like, we all know that it still gets like 20 miles to the gallon. So, like, I don't want to glorify that. I'm just saying that we also never went all in on that. You know what I mean? Like, there's technology there that can be expanded on and pushed way harder. And I believe that the ability to get to the goal line of where, you know, rightfully so, a lot of environmentalists want to get to. I believe that goal, it's not the goal that we're talking about is being unrealistic. It's the timeline to get to the goal and doing it in a way where we actually cannot see negative impacts on the rest of our society by doing it. And listen, I understand that, you know, and I don't pretend to be scientists, right? Like, not even close. So for the people that are pro-environmental, I understand that there is this, you know, kind of heavy impact date about, hey, we got to do this now because if we don't do it now, it's irreversible. Like, I'm with you. But I still think that 2035 is a long way away. It's 13 years, and it's not long enough to maybe get the technology and the grid up to where it needs to be able to do 100% EV, but it is long enough that if you start developing, you know, look, like, electric came out, and all of a sudden, like, car companies that had said, hey, by 2030, we're going to have a lot of these models. Now, all of a sudden, they're just, you know, they're taking all the technology they have, and they're like, the hell with it. They're jumping ship. And by 2024, most of these cars are going to be electric. You know what I mean? So if we had done that same thing with hybrid, I think you would have, first, you would have really gave the bulk of the people traveling, the bulk of that that commuting traffic, like the bulk of the actual use of vehicles in the country, I think you would have given them a heavy, heavy reprieve from the kind of the pollution that they're doing, because they would have had some sort of, you know, EV range. Yeah. And then the next piece of that is you would continue to use existing infrastructure like gas stations to be able to supplement what isn't available in the grid, so that we always have like a backup option. Listen, yes,
exactly.
Think about this for a second. Let's just compare this to airplanes. Would you want an airplane that goes up and if the electric cuts out, the thing just 100%. Dives into the ocean? Or would you like to have a plane that if the electric cuts out, they have the auxiliary power, and if the auxiliary craps out, they have the ability to, like, you know, put out a little flume that basically sucks in, you know, air to be able to put up like a little turbine effect to be able to at least power the radio. You know what I mean? Like, these are redundancies. And the fact that we're just jumping into this freaking thing and saying, hey, we don't need the parachute, we're going for it, baby. Like, you know, like, there's only so many ways that you can play that. And you could either really be really successful or you're going to fail exponentially.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, look at the Mach-E. It's like a good example of how this goes. Like, this stuff is getting so rushed to market. You know, governments, not just our government, but governments of the world are forcing this stuff, and it's making the manufacturers react kind of in big ways. And then you look at the Mach-E, like, that battery is made by BYD, which is a Chinese company that also is a car manufacturer that wants to get into the global car business and not just China or whatever. So these guys are making the battery. And then they've got Ford kind of stuck. You know what I mean? They can raise the price of the battery. Ford's got to deal with it. I think that it's a dangerous situation that makes the price of these things very volatile. And that's another thing. Like, it can people afford these cars? I mean, these cars are quickly getting to be upwards towards $80,000, $100,000 or whatever for an electric vehicle. So is that? I mean, aside from the whole grid and infrastructure, just financially, can this sustain? What's it going to look like? What's going to happen when cars become obsolete like electronics do, like your iPhone does? You know, what's going to happen when your car needs a new battery and, you know, after the second owner, it's pretty much total. If it needs a new battery, you know, is Ford going to start financing batteries? Well, hey, the new Mach-E's, you know, $90,000 now. But if you want to make your 2022 Mach-E keep going, we can finance you a $30,000 battery at 60 months. Like, there's so much craziness there. You're absolutely right. Hybrid is the natural, intelligent way to move forward, to be able to baby step it, you know, wade into the pool, test the waters kind of a thing.
Well, so, and going back to what you said, Wooly, one of the things that you said is like the hybrid name itself, just hybrid, a lot of people get turned off by it. You know what I mean? Meaning like, and that's the thing about car enthusiasts. You know, you guys set the, car enthusiasts, including myself, set the trends. Meaning, for example, what will make the car enthusiast community support hybrid?
Yeah, but I don't even think it's that though. Like, because like, I mean, I think, you know, for everybody that's super. So here's the thing: if everything was electric, you know, and this is a good question for Wooly, right? Mm-hmm. So everything's electric, right? You're a car enthusiast. Does that mean like, hey, as soon as the internal combustion engine's gone, if there's only electric, does that mean you give up on cars? Are you done? You know what I mean? Like, I say no. Like, yeah.
Like, again, to step back from like all the drama and divisiveness in it, an electric car could be extremely visceral and raw. They're not making them that way because the automotive industry can't seem to stop trying to make an iPhone. You know what I mean? Like, they're so obsessed with Apple Play or with screens or that kind of, they're obsessed with tech that makes drivers less capable. You know what I mean? It kind of protects drivers from themselves, and never does that actually make better drivers. It just makes us dumber and dumber. But electric, let's just fantasize that Toyota or Honda or whoever makes an MR2, but that it's electric and that it doesn't have a 300 mile range battery, and it's got like 120, 150 mile range battery. That brings the cost down. They don't put three screens across the dash. They make it kind of analog inside. Hell, maybe it's mid-engine. Maybe it's a mid-engine two-seater with the top that goes down, and they go, this is your commuter car. Drive this during the week. And then on the weekends, yeah, keep your F-150 or your Tahoe. Like, it's not electric that's car enthusiasts are against. I think it's just, for some reason, electric has to be iPhone. You know what I mean? Like, electric has to be autonomous. We can't think. Nobody is yet saying, well, we're going to make it just a radical electric fun car for a driver. It hadn't happened yet. It's all crossover.
Well, and you know, Dodge is, you know, the Challenger. They put out that electric renderings of the Hellcat, I believe, right? That's what they're calling it or something like that. And the car looked awesome. Like, the car was great, but here's the thing. Don't give me and don't give enthusiasts a car that is, like, supposed to be... Like, if you're going to give me an electric car, give me an electric car. Don't give me a car that's electric and then put speakers on the outside so they can hear my exhaust.
So it could sound like a regular car.
My dad said it the best. Don't remind me of what a cool car used to be, because that hurts. You know what I mean? Like, try and replicate what cool was. What is Mopar's challenge now is to find the new cool. Yeah. There is something in that little ball of electric motor that I don't understand that's cool. There is a way to make the hair stand up on your arm. I don't know what that is, you know, but there is a way. And Borla putting speakers in a Mach-E is not the way.
No, it's hard too, because, you know, when I see that, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. So when enthusiasts have loud exhausts and you pull us over all the time to be able to say, this is loud, you're violating this, but then you're going to put a speaker in, the speaker's okay. The speaker's okay. What, next thing you know, you're going to have to turn down your exhaust speakers? This is stupid. These are things that, this is a sentence that we should never have to worry about.
Turn it down, you have a dial for it.
Like, it's just crazy to me that,
Oh, sorry, officer.
Yeah, yeah, my bad. Let me turn down my exhaust. Like, this is stupid. So I think what people have to understand, and it's really hard, I think, when you speak to enthusiasts, because, like, for us, like, it sounds like we're very anti-electric, but it's not what it is. We're basically saying, hey, look, you know, just make the car a driver's car. You make the car a driver's car regardless of what powers it, and we're going to find a way to enjoy it. But the problem is that you're moving at a pace that even a blind enthusiast understands is not possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Enthusiasts aren't, like, totally on board because we have knowledge of cars. And that's another frustrating thing, me being in media. Like,
yeah,
I'm seeing media now, automotive journalists that are not car people. They are tech people.
Oh,
we lost Willie. Well, anyhow, so I understand what Willie's saying, though. He's saying, like, look, you got in a situation where, you know, these people that are not car people are writing articles about cars, and because there's so much tech going into them, they're able to write these articles, but they're losing the passion of the enthusiast that, you know, kind of drove these markets and these car markets forever. And so, you know, when I start thinking to me, I think Wooly's back, but when I start thinking to me about how, you know, these electric vehicles will come in, like, I think the biggest thing, and we'll wait till Willie gets back so he can hear this point. But I think the thing to me is, if you're going to go electric, I think the way to make an enthusiast feel better is twofold. One, car companies need to understand when they're making these cars that they still have to make a driver's car.
Yeah.
They still have to make a car that's exciting, that has an experience that people want to drive. That's number one. Number two, you have to give a pathway or at least some assurance to car people right now that if you have, I mean, we're talking about 2035 for all the sales of electric vehicles, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Give me a pathway that says, hey, like, if you still own your 2006 350Z,
okay,
you can keep it.
Okay.
Like, we're not saying...
What Wooly was saying, where, yeah, it's like we kind of develop an EV that in short distance traveling, it's something that you use, because the point is to stop putting out emission the way that is being done is because we're consistently using it. But if you're able to keep that 2006 350Z, yeah, where it's your car that you know that you use in for other aspects,
yep,
and but still have the EV that'll take you to work, that if you want to go to the grocery store, this is where you drive, or for example, you want to go on a long-term trip and this is the car that you take, but you're able to charge it in specific places. I think at the end of the day, the hard part is just the development of a grid and that actually works, and it's just very difficult to kind of get to that point at this moment, you know. Oh, it's probably his phone died.
So just so you know, Max, yeah, mm-hmm, Wooly just sent me a message and said, "What happened? The meeting expired." Max,
there he is. Oh, we got him back.
You're back.
I was looking to see if, like, the meeting expired or something. I was like, "What the hell just happened?"
Yeah. So when you kind of bowed out, we basically kind of just followed up on your point. I knew exactly where you were going when you were talking about, you know, these automotive enthusiasts, they're more tech-oriented. So what's happening here is they're writing about cars because the cars have more tech in them, but they're not writing about the car from a enthusiast point of view, where you actually talk about the car's ability to drive and what you get out of a car and the excitement. When a Johnny Lieberman talks about, you know, driving a car while he's driving a car, you can almost close your eyes and feel what he's feeling. You can feel the car he's driving. When these people talk about it, it's spec related. It's like, oh, it's, yeah, going to have this, it's going to have that. That's not what cars are to us.
Yeah. They talk about range, or they talk about the size of the screen, because, yeah, that's what they know.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is there's, like, this conflicting. They don't see cars the way that we do. We're having, yeah, different conversations. We don't see cars the way that they do. And I found... It's like this. I had a guy tell me that this is the example he gives. It's like, start asking the EV activist type of people. Like, okay, so what are you into? Like, what are you, and let's say they say guitars, right? You go, okay, perfect. You like guitars because they're artistic, they're handmade. They sound different from one another, especially over the decades. Like you can hear something from, I don't know, the 60s or whatever, and you think of Hendrix, or I don't know that kind of, you know, or the 80s, and you can look at Metallica's guitar and immediately hear Metallica. You know what I mean? Like these things are, or Van Halen's guitar. So imagine if I came to you, dude, and I said, well, we can make music on our phones now. So I don't get why you like guitars. Not only that, because we can make music on our phones, that's the way we have to make it. And you can no longer play guitars after 2035. Like, see how that would tick you off, you know? And then people are kind of like, I get it, but I don't get it, you know? But like, I get, okay.
No, Wooly, it's like this. This is what it's like. It's like, find everybody that plays guitars and say, hey, give me that guitar. You know what we're going to do? We're going to give you this Guitar Hero guitar. It's just as good. You don't have to play the strings. Right? It's gonna last way longer. You'll never have to change a string. And all you have to do is press these buttons and the beautiful music is gonna come out. Well, wait a minute. This beautiful music, this button controls six strings. Which one is gonna be? Whatever one you want, it's just gonna know, and you're just gonna press it and beautiful music will come out.
And it sounds exactly the same.
Give me your guitar.
And it sounds exactly the same.
But then they go, they genuinely don't understand. Because they're like, but it's better. It's easier. There's no strings, you know, and they don't understand why
it's
you
better.
Like strings.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of the problem. I mean, whatever, you know, it's a lot of the problem going on is that there's just kind of a failure to understand each other.
Yeah. I mean, look, I have an electric beard trimmer. You charge it every time after you use it or whatever it is. And, you know, sometimes you get to a point where you forget and, you know, you're midway through your trim and you look like a skunk because you only got to about here. You know what I mean? Like, just think about that. What happens to your car if you're like halfway over the Verrazano and all of a sudden it's like, nah, I think I'm done right here. Like, how do you?
Yeah, that's where you live forever.
Listen, you know, with a gas car, I'm sure there's going to be fixes for this. But with a gas car, you run out of gas, you know, you may have an uncomfortable walk. You may have to do what I did once, which is I couldn't find a jug to buy. So I ended up having to buy a thing of washer fluid, go outside the gas station, dump it on the ground, fill it up with gas. And by the way, if for anybody thinks that that's a good idea, it's a bad idea, not because it can just explode. That's a bad idea, too. But also because gasoline seems to eat that plastic very fast. You know, what I'm saying is, I was able to basically huff it back to the car, get enough into the car without a funnel with using my finger and pouring it down my finger. But that's a whole story. And get yourself to a gas station to basically fill up. When you run out of electric power, what's the quick fix to get a car out there besides towing it?
Yeah,
nothing as of now.
What if the electric fire truck that has to get to the fire runs out of battery power on the way there? What if it's in the mid spray and all of a sudden it's like, come on, listen, I just think like that. And you know what? Here's another question that just sparked my mind. So let me get this straight. We're making all vehicles sold in the country by 2035. You have to buy electric. Are we going to be doing the same thing for all the municipalities and all the equipment that they run, like snowplows? Like, are they going to all have to be electric? Like, I doubt it. Like, fire trucks, all electric? Nope, I'm sure not. Like, and the reason is because they know that if anything ever happened, they'd never be able to use the equipment.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We can sit there and give dumb examples all day.
No, they're good examples, John.
I know, but people can go, well, the same thing happens with, you know, what happens if you ride? Like, we can go back and forth. But the thing is, you have to progress this stuff. You cannot just throw away the old and bring in the new. There's going to be a time where there's 6% EVs or whatever. That's now. And then it should be like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. You don't go from 6% to 60% and hope it all works out.
That's
you know what I mean? Like, it's just not.
Yeah.
It's not the way that you do this. Two other things, or at least one other thing, I might have forgotten a third thing, but like the other problem for car enthusiasts is like, we understand cars enough to, a car is maintainable. once you switch over to EV, even if it's that rad imaginary MR2 EV we're talking about, you can't maintain it. You can't service it. You can't work on it. It feels like there's kind of a terminal life expectancy there. Like every time you charge it, you're killing it. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm a guy that doesn't charge my phone in a car. Like I won't charge my phone until it's about dead. So I'm anal about batteries anyway, but like there's a, whether it's an illusion or reality, there is a feeling that I can take my CRX, for example, and drive that for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? Like you can fix it, you can maintain it. With EVs, there's a sense of like, it's the T-Mobile thing. You turn it in and you get your new contract and you get another one.
Yeah.
The problem is the price is not as cheap as a phone. The price is a mortgage.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
So one,
I think that's another thing that closes people off.
One of the things I had said when you kind of cut out was, you know, I just, you know, in a selfish way, and I think this would put a lot of people at ease, is that 2035 is that deadline to purchase a new vehicle. You can't buy anything that's internal combustion. But what I'm saying is, just come out there and have a blanket statement, like, yes, this is where we're going. This is the way we have to go. But understand that. You know, they'll still like give me like DACA my cars. You know what I mean? Like, go ahead and just give me a pathway to know that if I still have my car that's internal combustion engine, there'll be a pathway for me to continue to maintain it and keep it. I just couldn't buy a new one.
Yeah, and I would be fine with that. In a perfect world, if you don't care about cars and if we can get the production side of EVs manageable, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you drive an EV?
Yep.
But maybe it's the conspiracy theorist in me, or maybe I'm just concerned or experienced, but like, I feel a sense of, but don't come try and take my internal combustion. Don't attack the hobbyist and start canceling car culture. And I have an instinct that that's what's next, right? Pretty soon, when everybody's driving their little Wally pods, you know, to work or whatever, eventually, somebody in an old 911 is going to go, wah! And they're going to go, holy crap, he was dangerous because he was driving and paying attention. And then the focus is going to say, yeah, he is dangerous. You know, it's already there. I mean, these people and the crossovers and the EVs, there's so much going on inside the car that they're distracted more often than not. You know, and then you have a driving enthusiast that's whipping between them, not to be an asshole, but because he's actually driving and paying attention, it startles them. And they go, hey, you jerk, you're putting me in danger. No, you're putting you in danger. Like, I'm doing it the way it's supposed to be. I'm actually driving the machine rather than having it drive me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so I know autonomous driving is a different subject, but it's like it is a little startling sometimes that even though they're not supposed to do this, that I'll look over in the HOV lane and there'll be straight up a dude that's like face is resting on the windshield while his car's driving him down. I mean, like, listen, I get it, but like, we're not there yet. Like, I mean, you gotta like, you know.
Yeah, pay attention, my dude.
You know what I mean? Like, that's some wild stuff, John.
You know, I keep envisioning this story in my head where you're just like at a party and you know when your phone dies and you're like, does anybody have a charger? I keep envisioning a version of that with, does anybody have a charger for my Tesla? And then you're just like, no one has one. And you just walk home.
John, you see the video of the dude that like straight up calls for like AAA for gas, and the guy comes and he's like, you got a Tesla, dude. We're not gonna, like, this won't work. And he opens up his trunk and he's got a generator in there. And he's like, oh, it's for my generator. And then he plugs the he uses the generator and then he plugs that into the car. And she popped in, so I don't know.
Did you hear that, Willie? No. I don't think he heard it. Okay. Right.
But yeah, so it's, you know, it's just one of those things. Oh, this is it. This is it.
Oh, we're able to see the video.
Yeah, we're showing the video here. A guy like straight up, he brings him gas and he like opens up the trunk and he's got a generator in there.
Oh my
God. It's great. And then he plugs in his car. You know what I mean? Cause he's got to charge the Tesla. I mean, this is like, it's crazy.
That's literally a contradiction of what it is. Yeah, of what the whole car is supposed to be.
You should be free to be that stupid if you want to be, but you should also be free to be able to reject that stuff and live a kind of simple, maintainable life if that's what you want to do. So,
yeah. I don't think EVs are the world, but I did think, you know, kind of bring this thing full circle and wrap up here. I did think that there was a really bold but also extremely monumental and important statement that Mr. Toyota made, because he's the first one to really make it from the side of being, you know, at the top of, you know, a major manufacturer and say, look, we can't go all eggs into the basket. We can't go hard and fast here. This is a potential for a catastrophe. Absolutely. Like, just think about this for a moment. Let's do it together. Let's do it the right way. Let's utilize all the technology we have and not just get blindsided by the agenda that's being pushed. So that's what I think is so important.
I wanted to bring up, if you haven't seen it, the Toyota Crown. I feel like it's a very good, like, looking at that car, it's a very good in between, especially when you think about a car enthusiast. I think this car, I think he actually put it out there like that, that message that he was trying to put it out there, trying to say, like, this is one of the cars that you can kind of use as a car enthusiast. It's a hybrid, and it's a good looking car. And I think that's the one thing that I tried to mention with what Wooly said, you know, aesthetics matters to a car enthusiast. And I think this car kind of sets that out for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad looking car. It's a little Blade Runner-ish for me, but, like, it's not, and it's like, it doesn't know if it wants to be a CUV or, like,
I think the word hybrid kind of kills it for a lot of people, and I get that, you know. I think if we were to kind of, I think if you reintroduce it in a different way, I think car enthusiasts will take to it a little bit easier.
Like, I don't know why when things went electric, all of a sudden cars had to change appearance. Like, why can't cars just continue to be... like, they don't have... I don't need a spaceship just because it doesn't have an engine. Like, I mean, but I think it's fair to say that we don't have to necessarily build, you know, some... Some of them are
little... we're in the minority now. The average buyer... like, statistically, doesn't really care what the car looks like. They care, can they connect their iPhone to it? Does it have Apple Play? Like, that is a serious buying motivator, apparently. I was reading an article, and I don't remember the percentage, but, like, that is a serious thing that people come in saying, yeah, does it have Apple Play? Like, that's what they care about. The CEO of Ford, Jim Farley, he was talking about, you know, every day he's talking about something crazy, but he was talking about, like, we're going to change our business model, keep the cars running for longer durations. Instead of the 5 or 6 year plan, it's going to be like the 8 to 10 year plan, at least. He's like, because we're finding out that customers don't care what they're driving. They care about the software that's in it.
So, you know, what's interesting, just bringing up Jim Farley, is that I believe, first off, my personal opinion is I think Ford, out of all the manufacturers right now that are running, has the best perspective and the best chance of overall being truly successful in this whole race to the finish
revolution
line. Yeah. That's a good way of saying it. And you know, they also said the same thing. They basically said, hey, look, you know, we have to continue to make internal combustion vehicles. It's just not possible. So what they basically did was they drew a line in the sand. They said, hey, look, we're gonna go. We are doing the electric thing, but we're also gonna continue, especially with all the heavier weight trucks, like all the F-250s, 350s, you know, all the big stuff. They're gonna continue to make those as the diesel and gas powered vehicles that they've continued to operate. They're investing in battery technology. They're also investing in other forms of battery technology, and I think that you may see Ford really, really, really take a stand in the future that we haven't seen some vehicle manufacturers take in a long time. So I'm really interested to see what they do. And plus, the fact that they actually came, they're still continuing to make enthusiast cars side by side with, you know, with these electric vehicles. I think they do get it. They just know that these consumers are going in two different directions, and there's a big split in the middle.
Yeah. Think about how hard that is to make cars for people that are completely split. And America is a unique country. It's big. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard for somebody that lives in the heartland to envision what somebody in the city of New York or or California needs out of a car, and vice versa. The people that are in those urban areas don't understand why you'd want a big F-250 that's so wasteful, but for them it's not wasteful, it's useful.
Yeah.
I think that when a leader like Toyota, the person, stands up and says something kind of against what's popular, you should listen to that. He's being a leader, you know, and I think that Jim Farley should listen to that. I think that a lot of those guys, Jim Farley's interesting. He's an open book. Sometimes he says stuff that seems brilliant, and sometimes he says things that I'm like, what, who let him say that today? You know, like, but maybe, you know, by Toyota standing up and saying that, it gives some of these other brands a little bit of courage to say what they're really thinking, because like I see right through Dodge. I know what they're thinking is different than what they're doing. You know, you don't give up selling Chargers and Challengers that after 10 years are still selling like hotcakes to go in it. They're being forced into it. You know, an electric Charger is not what they envision. You know what I mean? It's not what they want to do. It's what they have to do. So I don't know. I think that the CEOs of these companies need to be CEOs, right? And I'm not Mr. Stocks guy, but like maybe they need to quit listening to the politicians that don't know jack about cars and the shareholders that don't know jack about cars. And they need to start listening to the people around them that can see down the road and see where this leads.
But I'll argue one more point before we head out, just because you just kind of touched on everything that leads up to this, which is that I would argue that there's also a heavy monetary gain for these companies to go electric. Because while it does raise the price of the car for consumers, and we can't argue that, the thing is, it's easier to make an electric vehicle. Like, it is. Like, the internal combustion engine requires a lot more parts and a lot more systems and a lot more different things than electric vehicles. Electric vehicles, like, hey, take this one size, you know, fits all type box, you put it in here, you lace up some software that tells it, you know, how to control power and how to utilize battery consumption, and boom, off it goes. You know what I mean? Like, you need to swap one out, no problem. Bring it by, boop, 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 you know, like right into the car. Battery technology is what's holding this whole thing back. So I would say that from a profitability standpoint and from the ability to not have, I mean, think about it. We're not just talking about the materials on the car. We're talking about you're not going to need nearly as many workers to be able to service these things. You're not going to have a whole network of technicians to do this. You're going to have very, you know, much more streamlined processes. So I think for the vehicle manufacturers, there's a large incentive for them from a business aspect to go in this direction. But with that said, there's a very sustainable thing, which is that if you can't, and we've seen this before, at one point Chevy, I think they had like 55,000 trucks built and parked in the middle of a parking lot because they didn't have microchips to be able to complete the systems that they needed to complete. And now we're still seeing vehicles that are coming to the lots. They don't have these systems, you know?
Yeah.
They're giving you $50 off because they couldn't make your heated seats work. And they're giving you $150 off because, oh, by the way, you know, this rear camera doesn't work. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you know, from a profitability standpoint, it's great if you're trying to look at it from that perspective. But these companies, they're going to have to not just trust a board to vote. They're going to have to really lace in and say, hey, if we do this with everybody else, are we going to be able to get there? We're going to run into supply chain shortages, and then we're going to have a bunch of car bodies just sitting out there waiting for batteries. Like, what's going on here? How are we going to do this? And, you know, this is a time where, you know, look, we've come further. This is not the same thing as the evolution from the radio to the television. This is not that. And we're in a different time where social media makes things happen so quickly. You have Zoom calls. Like, I think that there needs to be a little bit more camaraderie between automotive, you know, manufacturers to be able to have more of a plan together and to kind of work together to work with some of these, you know, states that are trying to impose some of these things on them, you know?
Yep. It's funny because Porsche, I guess it was the CEO of Porsche, said something about what you're talking about. He was like, we can actually make a lot more profit on the EVs than we do on the internal combustion. Then he was like, that's not going to transfer to the customer. You know,
right.
He just flat out said it in his German way. He was like, don't think that that's going to mean that we make cheaper cars. It's like, they're still going to be very expensive. We're just going to make more money on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, man. Hey, whatever. We'll see where it goes. I personally just hope that they keep kind of the spirit of driving intact in somehow.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
that that's the challenge. And that seems like what Toyota is thinking in that mindset. You know what I mean? So I think that's important. I would just hate to lose the spirit of driving that so many of us connect with during this transition. If they can figure it out, I always tell people that, you know, because they think I hate EVs. And I'm like, it's not EVs that I hate. It's numb cars.
Yeah.
You know, so if we can separate EVs from being numb little transportation pods, then I'm open to it. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of my fight. I don't know. I think that, and you know, the infrastructure will come with the cars. You just got to kind of pace that the same way. One last thought. I know you guys, it's probably the end, but like the other thing is when this all goes down, right? The second that EVs or EV charging replaces gasoline, the cost is going to go right back up.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Oh, your electric bill is going to be $1 billion. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And I mean, it's.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like you're going to have to pay for we are paying for this grid one way or another.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're going to have to pay and jobs will translate. Like you're going to end up having people that, you know, maybe they're not doing this anymore, but they're going to have to go work in these places to produce energy or whatever it may be. I mean, you know, God forbid we figured out a way to actually transport this electric or whatever it may be. And then, you know, I don't know. Utilize some of this power in a way where we make, you know, there's these solar things in everybody's house and everybody can be contributive to the grid. We're not socialistic when it comes down to trying to help ourselves. We're only socialistic when it comes down to trying to give things to people. Yep. It's just, anyhow.
With that being said, if you'd like more content like this, make sure to download S3 Magazine's app, available right now on all iTunes.
Yeah. We only charge a small royalty for that announcement. So. But
you do have a good voice for radio, man. That was awesome.
Thank you very much. I have a good face
for radio, so that works out well for both of us. But listen, thanks for coming on here and hanging out with us for a little bit. And also, like Louis said, S3 Magazine, they have their app available in both iTunes and
Google Play.
Yeah.
So and like I said, like if you guys listening, like. We are pretty opinionated at S3, and you might not agree with everything that we say, but you can hopefully respect that we're saying it from a place of passion. And if you don't agree, freaking let us know, man. I have got car enthusiast buddies that have gone from internal combustion to Teslas, you know, and we disagree on a lot of things, but they do give me a lot of perspective, you know? So we welcome that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So that's pretty much it. Listen, John, thanks for hanging out with us. That's pretty much it from, you know, Koenig headquarters. We're going to get out of here. It's been cool hanging out with you. You know, we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. Later, guys. Thank you.
Peace out, man. That's it.
Yeah. I think that's it.
No, I mean, that's it. We did it already. I did the ending.
Bye.
We're out.
Is he still there?
Well, it doesn't matter. He's
still there.
No, is he?